It's a pleasure to have him back on the show. Somebody, as I say, with a very accomplished musical career, but also doing great things with charitable exploits and the like. Jimmy Jameson, who we are proud to say is a friend of the show. Jimmy, welcome back to the FDH Lounge. Good to have you on tonight again, sir.
Hey, buddy. Good to be here.
It's great to have you on, and I'm going to tell you what I've been telling everybody tonight here, since it is Bureau Night in the FDH Lounge. The FDH New York Bureau, our senior producer, Steve Cervillo, he was out there trying to gather up his favorites here for tonight, and I have to concur with his judgment. He put you in that group. He pushed to try to make it happen for tonight, and that's why you're here, because of his esteem and likewise mine for you, and for appreciating a chance to talk to you tonight.
Hey, guys, I'll tell you what, I appreciate it. You guys are always a pleasure to talk to. You're so knowledgeable about all sports and every sports event, everything, and wrestling, everything. And it's really a pleasure for me to talk to you guys, too.
Thank you. Jimmy, you anticipated here, before we let you go later on, speaking of sports and the like, we'd be remiss if we didn't get into a little bit of sports entertainment with you, since this is such a good week for your buddy, the King. But we'll get to that.
Okay, yeah.
We'll definitely have to talk about that. This has got to be one of the highlights of his career, and probably the biggest one that he's had, maybe in the last 2 decades or so. But as far as everything's going with you, it's interesting because, again, in listening to this CD, Crossroads Moment, and I want to thank your people for having sent it out to us here, it was very interesting because the last time you were on, we were talking about the music you were working on at that time, some collaborations with some other leading musicians. And at that time, it seemed to be kind of an amalgam of different styles, some Delta Blues worked into the mix, and a lot of different things going on here. Versus I listened to this today, the Crossroads Moment, and I was kind of catching up on it because I had listened to it when I first got it a few weeks ago, and it seems to be really that kind of straight ahead 80s hard rock kind of a sound, something that we remember you doing a lot back in the day here. So talk about the thought process when it came to putting this CD together.
You know, it all started out to be I couldn't really decide what I wanted to do. I'm sorry. Hold on 1 second.
Oh, take your time. But we are pleased to be speaking here tonight. Jimmy Jameson.
I had a malfunction on my phone right there. I'm sorry.
No problem, Jimmy.
Okay. This record, Crossroads Moment, started out. Actually, it kind of evolved into what it is. We started out, we recorded and wrote some country songs at first.
Wow.
We experimented with some other tunes. I went up to Jim Peterick's house in Chicago, who was an old keyboard player for Survivor and one of the main writers. And we just tossed it around. And finally, I got a call from Frontiers Records and gave me an offer to do a record, pretty much straightforward 80s rock kind of stuff, you know. And so that's pretty much how it came about. Jim and I would go to the go to a little bar around the corner from his house, and we'd just talk for a little while, you know, and have a drink, and whatever came spilled out of my mouth is what we went back and wrote about.
Let me ask you this, because as somebody who, I've never been a performing musician beyond a little bit of the tiny little bit of jazz band performing in my youth, and all that was performing other people's music, quite frankly. But for somebody who's creating music, it's funny because I was talking to another one of our FDH Lounge dignitaries, our friend Nate Noy, who's going to be in the segment following you, and I was telling him about the CD today, and I said it's really interesting. It's got this 80s hard rock kind of a sound to it, and he and I were kind of talking philosophically here, like, you know it when you hear it, right? The sounds of an era, it could be, you know, maybe the sounds of the 70s as well, or even the 90s stuff. A lot of 90s stuff blends together with today's stuff, but the 70s and the 80s were pretty distinct. If you're sitting there thinking, I'd like to, you know, create something in this sound, I like to tap into what people think of when they think of that time period. What are some of the things you do to try to make it happen? Because you had the vision, and very clearly it worked, because that's what I was hearing, and I think other people were hearing when they listened to the CD. How do you get from point A to point B and really summon up that 80s sound?
You know, it really, it wasn't really, that sound was our sound, you know, and so it really came natural. it's a big snare drum, you know, loud big snare, so you can hear the drums and a vocal out front and some heavy guitars. And, you know, it pretty much, we didn't really have to think about it at all. We just did what we do. And I think if we had to do some other kind of era's music, we'd have to rethink that even more so than the 80s stuff, because the 80s stuff was, that's it just came right out of us, you know. It's an automatic. And if we had to do a 60s sound, it'd be a little bit different, you know. It'd be more psychedelic or whatever you call it, you know, but whatever the 60s sound was in the 70s and the 90s and for present day, that's when it would be hard to get from point A to point B. But on the 80s sound, we just did what we do, and it just happened.
Well, it was a great sounding CD, and I really enjoyed it. And it's funny because I remember the previous time that you were on, we were talking about people coming up to you and expressing how much certain songs have meant to them in their lives. And it's weird because I was looking at the date of when you were on previously, and it was only a couple weeks before Michael Jackson passed away. And I remember we did some retrospectives after Michael Jackson was gone, and there were a lot of people who were talking about, you know, why is there this massive outpouring of grief and everything like that, and particularly with the freak show that his life had become in recent years. And I remember speculating at the time, saying, you know, maybe it wasn't so much about him personally, but, you know, the music gets intertwined into our lives. I have a lot of memories from when Thriller was out, and a lot of people do. And,
oh, yeah.
You know, you must have a lot of insights, and you must have been thinking some of the same things when that whole national spasm of grief was going on, because you get that same type of thing from people all the time, except people have been fortunate enough to get to express it to you and say, hey, Jimmy, this is what it meant to me.
Exactly. Yeah, that whole, you know, music, when you listen to certain songs, when you listen to music from a certain time in your life, and you hear a song and you say, wow, I remember I remember hearing that song when I was standing outside kissing this girl that I was totally in love with in the 12th grade, you know, or 11th grade or whatever. And it takes you back in time. You know, it's more than the performer. It's a feeling. It's your life. You know, it's life, and it's what people remember and your past and everything you went through and what you were going through at the time. And when you hear a certain song, it's weird how it can take you back in time.
It really does evoke that. It evokes a lot of memories and just all these things that are all of your experiences and everything like that. Of all the times that people have reached out to you to let you know how much your music's meant, I dare say that there have probably been few experiences that have meant more to you than on some of these USO tours. I know you've been over to go play. I don't know if it was Iraq or Afghanistan or both,
yeah.
But I know you've been over there. You've made the tours, and I got to believe that's about as good as it gets as far as being rewarding, getting a chance to give back to those heroes.
And I'll tell you what, that was we were in Iraq, and we played like 7 or 8 shows over there at different forts. And I talked to a lot of the guys over there. A lot of them were just young kids, 17, 18 years old, you know, and they knew our stuff. It was unbelievable because I had it was myself and Skip Martin from the Dazz Band and Andy Cool and the Gang and Larry Hoppin from Orleans and a lot of folks from bands in that era, and it was amazing. Joe Bouchard from Blue Oyster Cult, he was playing with us, and we had this cowbell, and we'd set the cowbell out front, and it said more on the cowbell, you know, because that's a Saturday night skit that Christopher Walken did, more
yep.
cowbell. And we'd do Fear the Reaper, and we'd have one of the soldiers come up on stage, and we'd have to get a new cowbell every day because they beat that cowbell to death. Man, and I'll tell you what, they enjoyed themselves so much. It was such an honor and such a privilege to get to go over there and watch those guys, you know. And I had to, at the time I went over, I wasn't sure. I had thought we shouldn't be over there at first, you know, but after talking to some of those kids, they said, I'll tell you, one of them summed it up. I'd much rather have fight it over here and stop it over here than to have to fight it at home. And that pretty much, I said, wow. Well, that's, you know, no more needs to be said. And, you know, so, you know, our kids are over there, those guys are over there, and we have to back them. And it was such an honor for me to be just to be a part of that. I'll never forget it.
Oh, that's awesome. I mean, that's got to be one of the most moving, rewarding things that you could
really
ask
was.
For, a chance to to give back to those guys. I know in the course of your travels, too, and I'm struggling to place this exactly right now as I'm looking around on your website. Oh, I just did find this here. Okay. As far as travels go, there was a concert, I guess, in Trinidad, and I'm looking at some of the other performers on the bill. I see that another one of our lounge guests, Rick Springfield, was on the show with you. What was that?
Well, actually, it hasn't happened yet. We haven't done it yet. It's coming up.
Oh, May 14th.
Yes, okay. With Rick Springfield and Richard Marx and Michael Bolton.
That's what happens when you don't get enough sleep, Jimmy.
I'm looking forward to that.
When you don't get enough sleep, you read May 14th as March 14th. Okay.
Well, you're a hardworking man, so I understand.
Okay, that hasn't happened yet. Well, that's got to be something to look forward to. That sounds that sounds like a pretty good bill.
Oh, it's going to be a blast. Rick Springfield and I were born on the same day, so we have a big something in common. And I don't know if he knows it or not. He probably does. But we're probably going to hang some. And I know some of the guys that work there in his band and on the crew and everything.
Well, and as far as other folks that we've had as lounge guests as well, you mentioned them before because obviously you have a very tight musical association. Jim Peterick, we had him back on in December, and obviously he having been a longtime member of Survivor as well as Ides of March and some other things that he's done. So obviously that he's got to be on a short list, I'm sure, of the favorite people you've ever worked with.
Oh, yeah, he's one of the best songwriters in the business. You know, he's written songs that people don't even realize he's written. You know, Heavy Metal for the movie Heavy Metal. He wrote that with Sammy Hagar. He's done all kinds of stuff. And it's a great honor. I put him up there with Brian Wilson of the Beach Boys as far as writing.
Whoa, that is a tremendous compliment right there put him on that level as much as Brian Wilson is publicly regarded. But, yeah, I mean, I got to agree with you. I mean, he is tremendously talented. It was very interesting to speak with him and to hear. We had him on. It happened to be right around the time of the anniversary of the assassination of John Lennon, and we thought we would sort of pose some questions just in general to somebody in the music business, and lo and behold, it turns out he was so influenced by the Beatles and could speak, you know, from such a deep level about what they meant to him. So yeah, I know that you know, he's had some very strong influences in the songwriting craft to hear him say it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and you hit the nail on the head. The songwriting is a craft, and he's honed that craft to a fine edge, I'll tell you.
Yeah, he's done tremendous, and again, I'm sure somebody who you know, you've been thrilled to work with over the years. But so you've got this Crossroads Moments CD. You really kind of summoned up a lot of the classic direction here of some of the high points, at least commercially, of your career. So as things are going now, as they're continuing to evolve for you, of course, you know, there's the one concert at Trinidad that we talked about, but more big picture, how do you see things continuing to evolve here? Because obviously you've gone through, you've worked in some different genres, and you obviously have the option to go back to that anytime you want to. So how do things basically sit looking ahead here through 2011 and beyond to you, Jimmy?
Well, right now I'm in the process of I'm working on Billy Gibbons' solo CD. Billy Gibbons is the lead singer, lead guitar player for ZZ Top. And I'm also working on ZZ Top's next CD. And we've only done two songs so far off ZZ's new CD. And I was over in Germany recently, and we got snowed in for a couple of days, so we went in the studio with the guitar player from the band I was playing with, Fred Zahl, and wrote a song. Supposedly, we were writing it for Volkswagen for them to use in their campaign, but the guitar player, when we finished mixing it, sent it to a couple of radio stations around Germany, and they called back freaking out, you know, and so we went to the stations and did interviews and everything, it's like number one on the biggest station in Berlin right now. And I'm shocked, you know, because it was just a commercial, you know, that we turned into a song that we finished it out, you know, but it was just supposed to be a commercial. So I'm kind of shocked that's going on right now. And, I'm also, I just finished a, recording a duet CD with Bobby Kimball, who's the lead singer of Toto. And it's going to be coming out really soon, and I'm about to get ready to start my next solo CD also. So I've got a lot of things, you know, a lot of irons going in the fire. They're heating up, and hopefully they'll all be good.
Absolutely, and I remember Mr. Servillo telling me actually about that duet CD. I can't wait to check that out. That's going to be interesting.
And, yeah, it is. It's very interesting. It's unusual.
Yeah,
it's unusual that two singers like that get together, you know, and do something like that. You know, I haven't. I remember. Oh God! I can't remember the guys. Kenny Loggins.
Oh yeah.
And Jim Messina did a record together, but Jim Messina wasn't really a big singer, a lead singer in a band. You know, he was one of the guys, and he just sang some. You know, but I can't remember anybody else that's gotten together and done that.
That's going to be very interesting to hear how the styles work together on that. I'll be very intrigued on that. And your present project here, the one for the commercial music that ended up going number one in Berlin. I'll tell you what, Berlin, you know, those hipsters over there are pretty hard to impress. You must have really done something right if it's number one in Berlin.
I'm telling you, man, it is strange. You know, it's a strange feeling getting these calls. And wow, man, have you been on the internet? You seen where you are on the charts? I said, geez. Those people over there, when you get them, once you do win them over, and once they do start liking your stuff, they are the most loyal fans I've ever seen. It's really strange because that's a tough crowd, you know. But then they like a wide variety of music. But it seems like everybody's latched onto this song or something and are really supporting it.
Absolutely, and that's tremendous that they've done that, and you get a little bit of bonus coverage there from that doing even better than you expected. That is, that's awesome.
I never realized that it was going to be a song that was going to be played on the radio.
Hey, Jimmy, sometimes you never know, man.
I'm not arguing with it though.
You never know how these things are going to materialize sometimes. Another note here before I ask you about this other thing, I was going to ask you about some of the benefits, and we've talked about this previously with St. Jude. I see also, piggybacking on the USO thing here, I have a note from Steve Servillo, I guess, that we're going to be having somebody on shortly from the Wounded Warrior Project. I guess he's going to be going to a charity awards dinner for that on Thursday night. So I look forward to that being the case, and a very, very worthy cause to be sure, as is the St. Jude's Children's Research Hospital. And we've talked about this with you on the show previously, and also some off air with you and with your people about this and some of the different auctions that have gone on. And I understand that there's always a lot of work being done to try to help these very deserving kids here who really could use a break, and you've really been immersed in that. So why don't you talk about that a little bit, let the audience know what they need to know about this organization and the good work that they do.
Yes, I would be honored to talk about St. Jude Hospital. Is the most unbelievable hospital, the most unbelievable charity that I've ever done anything for. The Ronald McDonald House also. When if your child is sick or and you don't have the money for doctors, and you don't have the money to come to St. Jude and have a place to stay, they'll give you a free place to stay at Ronald McDonald House, and they don't charge you anything to put your child in a hospital and get it the care it needs, whether it's cancer or whatever it is. You know, it's amazing that the team of doctors up there and the staff at St. Jude are unbelievable. That you go there and you walk in the place and they are uplifting. They make you feel good. They make make the kids feel good. They, you know, the kids aren't worried. A lot of them are really sick, but they still. They enjoy being there, you know, the whole time they're sick, and that's an amazing thing that they can get that across to the kids. And I first started with St. Jude, years and years ago when I met Danny Thomas, and he told me that no child should ever go without health care, without being able to have a doctor help him. And he touched my heart when he talked, and I did a telethon for him on TV way back then, and I believe it was in the late 70s or early 80s or something like that. That's where it all started. And after that, myself and this DJ from FM 100, Scott Ennis, we would just go up there at Christmas time and take a little jam box and sing Christmas songs or whatever tracks we had. and we just sing for them, you know. If the kids and the parents would be in the room, they'd all come in this room, you know, and I didn't expect this at all. You know, I was just expecting to go in the rooms and do it, just sing a little bit to them, but they all came down in the wheelchairs and everything, and everybody was crying. Oh, gosh, it was so heavy. It was so moving. But it was hard to do again after that, you know, but we do it as much as we can. And I've tried to do everything I possibly can to help St. Jude in the meantime, throughout the years. Year before last, we did a Jimmy Jameson St. Jude benefit show where all my friends came and played, Roy Head, Orleans, John Cafferty, just a lot of different stars came out and answered the call and raised some money. And we just try to do everything we can, and I plan on doing this. As a matter of fact, in a few days, I've got to go to South Beach, Miami. I'm singing the national anthem, and I'm singing four or five songs down there for the St. Jude people at the St. Jude Triathlon, I believe it's called. And that'll be my next venture with St. Jude.
Well, that's great stuff, Jimmy. God bless you. It's very worthy work, and it's good to know that people are pitching in to get it done. Now, like I said before, we can't let you go without getting to this. We talked about it the last time you were on the show, you being a fan and somebody with a little bit of a connection to the business here, the old Memphis wrestling scene, you being friends back in the day with Jerry Jarrett and Jerry Lawler. Your old friend Jerry Lawler, I don't know where this places on his career highlights here. I mean, it's got to be on the short list with Curt Hennig and the AWA World title back in 88 and maybe a handful of other things here. His first match at WrestleMania, and they've made such a big deal about it over the last couple months that he hasn't had one, and now he's got one, a very heated storyline. Arguably, nothing comes in with more heat than this whole thing with him and Michael Cole, which in and of itself is it just so wild when you stop to think about that. But what are your thoughts on this? Have you talked to him recently here? He's 5 days away from one of the biggest days of his life. So what's going through your mind?
You know, I'm so proud and so I feel like a part of it. You know, I'm so proud of Jerry, and I'm so happy for him, and I'm so that things are looking so good for him. And this whole thing is so wild. You know, I'm just overjoyed that it's happening. You know, I got all these. I always get up early Saturday morning and watch Memphis wrestling on TV with my grandmother. You know, so I've done it all my life, and I'd go to matches, you know, on Monday nights at the Mid-South Coliseum, and it would be like a sold-out concert every time. And there were people there. They were screaming. They were into it. It was an unbelievable experience, and to get to know these guys, you know, is amazing, because I was a fan of theirs before I knew them, and now I'm friends with them, and it's like an honor for me, you know, and all these Hulk Hogan, even, you know, I'm no Hulk, and it's just amazing that some of the things that they've been through, and that they've the ups and downs in their careers, and I'm just so glad for Jerry that things are happening like this for him.
It has been really unbelievable. We've had the King on the show previously, and I look forward to getting him back on again to talk about this after it's happened. But, Jimmy, again, it's always a pleasure to have you on with us here. And, again, you were somebody we wanted on this special night for the New York Bureau, and I really lived up to the expectations. Thank you so much, and we look forward to doing it again sometime soon.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Appreciate it. The great Jimmy Jameson, everybody. Appreciate having him on the program here.